For the past month, the world's been focused on a potential conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
Russia's now amassed around 100,000 troops near its border with Ukraine, leading to huge international concern.
The White House has warned that a ground invasion could be imminent.
We're now at a stage where Russia could at any point launch an attack in Ukraine.
NATO is readying troops to send to Eastern Europe.
NATO allies have put forces on standby and sent ships and fighter jets to bolster Europe's eastern defenses.
Russian officials have repeatedly said they have no plans to invade, but over the weekend, the U.S. said that any Americans in Ukraine, including some embassy personnel, should consider leaving the country.
They're also warning American citizens in Ukraine who are not working for the U.S. that if war does break out, they should not expect to be evacuated by the government.
Our colleague James Marson wanted to know how Ukrainians are feeling.
It's a snowy morning here in Kyiv.
So last week, he went to Ukraine's capital city, Kyiv.
Where I'm going to take the temperature of what people think about Putin having massed tens of thousands of troops on Ukraine's border, what people expect, what their everyday lives look like under the potential threat of war.
James says that some Ukrainians felt afraid. Others felt resigned.
But I think one of the overriding feelings that I got from people was preparedness and willingness to stand up to Russia. There was one guy I met who had trained his kids, who were 10 and 14, to handle a pistol. There was another guy who owns a cafe that's well known for its brownies. The brownies are delicious, by the way. And he said, look, I'm getting on with my life. I'm studying for an MBA. But also, if the Russians come, I'm going to fight.
One reason so many Ukrainians feel ready to fight is because over the last decade, the country has been undergoing a major cultural shift. After decades of being closely tied to Russia, Ukraine has found a new sense of national pride. Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Ryan Knudsen. It's Wednesday, January 26th. Coming up on the show, Ukraine's cultural shift and why it's put the country in Russia's crosshairs.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
Ukraine spent centuries under Russia's control, but since declaring independence from the Soviet Union in 1991, it's taken steps to build stronger ties to the West, especially recently. In the last decade, Ukraine signed a trade deal with the European Union and started working more closely with NATO. And Ukraine hasn't just been getting closer to the West, it's also been actively pulling away from Russia. One pivotal moment happened in 2013 when Ukrainians took to the streets to oppose the country's pro-Russian president and started attacking symbols of Russia's power.
So these big protests started. One of the first things you saw is a nationwide movement tearing down statues of Lenin. You then saw renaming of towns and streets that had been named after Soviet figures. You know, it was a very visible rejection of that part of Ukraine's history. It was a very visible rejection of this link with Russia.
By 2014, the Ukrainian president fled to Russia, and Russia invaded eastern Ukraine, which triggered a war that's killed 14,000 people and is still going on. And James says that in flexing its military strength, Russia's strategy has had some unintended consequences.
What you often find in history is that war, conflict, helps to forge a national identity. And that's certainly true in the case of Ukraine. People are getting a sharper sense of what it means to be Ukrainian.
And this new sense of Ukrainian identity means that Ukraine is also diverging from Russia culturally. For example, Ukraine is a bilingual country. Most people speak Ukrainian and Russian. But since 2014, there's been a big shift towards speaking Ukrainian.
Russian was the language of the intellectuals. It was the language of the city, whereas Ukraine was the language of the land. It was the language that farmers would speak, the people in the countryside. I lived permanently in Kiev from 2007 until 2012. Most people spoke in Russian, actually. I was learning Ukrainian. And if I started to speak Ukrainian in a cafe, often people would reply to me in Russian. But after 2014, a lot of people consciously took the decision, I'm going to speak Ukrainian.
James talked about this shift from Russian to Ukrainian in contemporary culture when he sat down with the editor-in-chief of Elle magazine's Ukrainian edition last week.
Her name's Sonia Zabuga. She has been the editor of Elle in Ukraine since 2008. I met her in the offices of Elle, this beautiful, stylish, open space, you know, and they were serving all this very fashionable, you know, I'm an espresso guy and they serve very fashionable coffee.
Do you drink matcha?
Sure.
Yeah. Можете нашому гостю матчу? Would you like to, on the base of banana milk, it's more sweet.
Just a few years ago, Elle magazine was all in Russian.
But Sonia said that they started to shift.
I remember the interview we did like 15 years ago. With
the first article that they carried in Ukrainian was an interview with a very famous Ukrainian actor called Bohdan Stupka. And he spoke Ukrainian, and the author of the article did the interview in Ukrainian. So they decided, why would we put this into Russian?
So that's why the text was printed in Ukrainian 100%. Despite the 99% of content was Russian. So this was the first step where the former editor of Elle Ukraine decided to do.
So this was kind of a breakthrough moment.
Yes. I think in some way, yes.
People thought, why not?
Why not? Yes, why not, actually?
And then once you've done it once, it becomes easier to do it again. And now, as of December, they made it 100% Ukrainian.
Elle magazine decided to shift to Ukrainian on its own. But starting this month, magazines will be required by law to publish at least half their issues in Ukrainian.
It's not as if they shifted from Russian to Ukrainian because of the law. They shifted from Russian to Ukrainian as part of a natural process, which then, you know, Sonia said to me that there's demand. You know, that's also why they moved. It's about demand being there to shift to Ukrainian. Mm-hmm. So that's also why they've done it.
Another example of how Ukraine has severed its ties to Russia is the emergence of a separate Ukrainian Orthodox church. Nearly three quarters of Ukrainians identify as Orthodox Christian. But until 2019, there was only one officially recognized Orthodox church in Ukraine, and it was the Russian Orthodox Church, which is headquartered in Moscow. This became a real problem when Russia invaded in 2014. When he was in Ukraine, James talked about that 2014 invasion with one of the top church officials in the country, Archbishop Yevstrati of St. Michael's Cathedral in Kiev.
So maybe the first thing I could ask you is just to update me on sort of how...
The Archbishop told James that to many Ukrainian worshippers, it seemed like the official Russian Orthodox Church had sided with Russia. His parishioners would tell him...
When I saw how Russian church support Putin, support Russian state, for me, it was a point of no return. I understood that if I will still come to services of Russian church in Ukraine, I will be treated as somebody who support Putin, who support Russian policy, Russian aggression against Ukraine. And many people from that time changed their mind and their affiliation.
The Russian church did condemn the war at the time, but it did not place blame on Russian President Vladimir Putin, which upset some Ukrainians, as James remembers from his own reporting at the time.
I went to villages where they had kicked out the priests from the Russian Orthodox Church because some of them felt that the Russian Orthodox Church was not sufficiently condemning Putin for invading Ukraine. So you had this movement, you know, dozens of churches across the country where ordinary people kicked out their Russian priests.
In 2019, the break with Russia became official. Ukraine got its own independent Orthodox church that was recognized by the global leader of Orthodox Christians in Istanbul. James and the Archbishop, who's from the new Ukrainian church, discussed why this move and other cultural shifts were so significant.
If we look at these broad cultural changes that we've seen in Ukraine, so it's language is one of them. The church is another one. So these are the cultural changes, which I think you were also describing before. It's not a political change. It's actually something from the ground that is something new.
It's a change of self-determination. It's a slow process of the broke ties, broke those chains which united Ukrainian society with Soviet and Russian imperial past. It's a slow process, but not reversible and not stopped.
While Ukraine's sense of national identity is stronger than ever, for Putin and Russia, it's a looming threat. That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. If you're like most people, you've had your fair share of financial questions. Questions like, will you be able to afford a third kid? Will you be able to do everything you want when you retire? What if you outlive your savings? Empower knows these questions can be stressful, so they're here to help answer your what-ifs and empower what's next. Join 18 million Americans and take control of your financial future. Tap the banner to learn more or visit empower.com.
This episode is brought to you by GlobalX ETFs. Buzz around artificial intelligence is seemingly everywhere. Is your portfolio keeping up? Consider the GlobalX Artificial Intelligence and Technology ETF, ticker AIQ, which invests in dozens of stocks at the leading edge of this disruption. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Technology companies can be affected by rapid product obsolescence and intense industry competition. Before investing carefully, consider the fund's objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in the full or summary prospectus at globalxetfs.com. Read carefully. Distributed by SEI Investments Distribution Company.
As Ukraine has been striving for self-determination, Russian President Vladimir Putin and many Russians have been watching with a growing sense of alarm.
Even though Ukraine gained independence in 1991, Russians, and I'm not just talking about Putin here, Russians tend to see Ukraine as very, very close. They often tend to see that Russia should have a special right to intervene in Ukraine, because the countries are so close.
Putin has spoken out forcefully about Russia's special claim to Ukraine.
He very, very frequently comments on the language issues in Ukraine. He complains that Russian speakers are having their rights trampled upon.
And when it seemed like Ukraine would get its own independent church, he tried hard to stop it.
Putin and the church in Russia are very, very close. He and the church campaign strongly, very strongly against Ukraine being given its own church. And in fact, when the decision had been taken for Ukraine to be given its own church, Putin very quickly called a meeting of his National Security Council. And I think that's very, very telling, because it's not just about Ukraine gaining some sort of religious, cultural independence. It's about much more than that. It strikes at the heart of what Ukraine means to Russia politically and in terms of national security.
And last year, with Ukraine continuing to slip further away, Putin wrote an essay, a 7,000-word essay, that laid out just how deep he believed the links between Ukraine and Russia went.
And it essentially described Ukraine and Russia as one nation. Putin always calls them brother people, brother nations. Russia traces a lot of its history, its religion, its culture back to Kiev. Kiev is seen as the mother of all Russian cities. And so for the Russians, it plays a very important part for them culturally, historically, in many different ways. Essentially, he describes Ukraine as part of Russian lands. He describes Ukrainian language as essentially a dialect of Russian.
By drawing on these deep historical ties, Putin was staking a Russian claim on Ukraine, a claim that Ukraine's cultural shift seems to threaten.
A strong Ukrainian identity would be troubling for Putin because it would undermine his arguments. One of his main arguments for why Russia should have a strong right to influence Ukraine, to even to intervene in Ukraine. Ukraine is drifting away from Russia culturally. So time is slipping away for him to stop that from happening. So I think that's one of the reasons that we're seeing Putin making this push right now.
But what exactly that push will look like isn't clear. In Kiev, James spoke to senior government officials about what they think an attack could entail.
Okay.
You know, I sat down with the National Security Advisor, Oleksiy Danilov, and, you know, a lot of what we've been hearing from the U.S. is concern that Russia could invade at any moment. You know, very soon Russia could launch a military invasion. And he said, look, that's possible. But we see the threat somewhat differently. We don't think Russia is going to launch an invasion because the risks are simply too great. Ukrainians will fight.
Я можу сказати за наш дух. Внутрішній дух. Ми вільні люди. Ми ніколи вже не підемо під протекторат якогось царя. Він нам
The military has got much stronger since 2014. And Ukrainians are ready to fight. The spirit of the army has got much stronger. Its equipment has got much better since 2014. So Ukraine is ready to fight. Also, the West has said that it will levy punitive sanctions on Russia if it does invade. So what the National Security Advisor was saying is that we don't see that as the most likely scenario. We see the most likely scenario as a destabilization campaign by Russia.
Питання внутрішньої дестабілізації для Російської Федерації – це питання номер один. Ми з вами про це вже говорили. Вони на сьогоднішній день ставлять на меті...
Using cyber attacks, using disinformation, using maybe false flag attacks, maybe trying to oust the leadership of Ukraine to try to install its own leadership and change the course of the country in that way, rather than risking a full-scale military onslaught that could be really brutal and bloody and, you know, be very risky politically for the Russians as well as the Ukrainians.
I wonder if it already is too late, because even if Putin were to invade Ukraine now, the country has already begun to move away from Russia. So doesn't that mean that an invasion could potentially backfire?
I think you're right. You know, it could already be too late for that. A poll at the end of last year showed that one-third of Ukrainians say they are ready to take up arms and fight a Russian invasion. You know, Ukraine has changed. Ukrainians see Ukraine as an independent country, charting its own course.
In hopes of avoiding a conflict, the U.S. and its allies have been negotiating with Russia. Earlier today, the U.S. gave Russia a written proposal for ways both countries could work towards lowering tensions. According to people familiar with the matter, the proposal does not meet Russia's main demand, which is that the U.S. cut military ties with Ukraine and that Ukraine be denied NATO membership permanently. That's all for today, Wednesday, January 26th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. If you like the show, follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We're out every weekday afternoon. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.